It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Larry Magid, Farhad Manju, and Alex Lindsay will talk about the latest tech news, news from Barcelona, Mobile World Congress. How long can Microsoft sell an Android phone? And the world's largest Pokemon game. It's all next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 447, recorded March 2nd, 2014. Anarchy wins. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter TWiT. And by Warby Parker Eyewear. Get boutique-quality, classically crafted eyewear at revolutionary prices. For a free home try-on of five stylish frames of your choice, plus free three-day shipping on your final frame purchase, go to warbyparker.com/twit. And by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet with coworkers and clients anywhere. Share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing. Even present from an iPad. Start your 30-day free trial of GoToMeeting today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, use the promo code TWIT. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show that covers the week's tech news. Welcoming a new panelist on TWiT. I'm very happy to have him. Farhad Manju has written for Salon, for Slate, for the Wall Street Journal. He's currently at the New York Times, where he's taken David Pogue's place and is doing great stuff, as always. Always, to me, and I was telling you this before the show, one of the most insightful writers in technology today. So good to have you on, Farhad.
Hey, good. Thanks. Good to be here. I've been a fan, and I'm happy to be here.
Oh, good. You're traveling. Are you going to some great conference or something exciting?
No, I'm going. My wife is a doctor, and there's a medical conference here in San Diego, so I'm just tagging along with her.
Even better, the doctors get the best junkets of all. Even better than New York Times columnists.
I'm hoping to get some fancy doctors.
Samples. Just samples. Also with us, Larry Magid from CBS News. Larry's a regular on the show, and we always welcome him with open arms. Nice to have you.
Always fun being here.
ConnectSafely.com, .org, SafeKids.com. And we're pleased. We kind of roped Alex Lindsay in. I saw him wandering through the studio. I said, come here.
I wasn't quite ready. I was just wandering through, picking
That's
up
great.
Some stuff.
Yeah. Thrilled to have you. Alex Lindsay of the Pixel Corps.
I think the last time I was on TWiT, we were in the old house.
What?
I'm not.
Oh, that's just wrong. Alex is a regular Mac Break Weekly, but goodness gracious, you should always be on TWiT.
Good to be back.
I have to say, weird. I'm looking at our great geek audience. How many of you here for RSA? Not one. The big security conference was this week in San Francisco, and nobody came.
I was there.
Did you go, Larry?
One day. I went for the keynotes, yeah.
A lot of the security experts said ever since the story that RSA had accepted $10 million from the NSA to compromise its recommendations for encryption so that the NSA would have back doors into what one would hope would be secure encryption. No, everybody's kind of turned their back on the RSA.
The funniest thing about that story is that it was only – I mean, if you're going to sell out sort of the backbone of your company, why would you do it for only $10
million? I know, it's nothing.
Right.
It was like
the interesting thing about RSA Conference is that every single keynoter ranted about the NSA. So it was kind of this, ironically, the place where the NSA got trashed from the stage.
Did you go to Colbert's keynote? Because he closed the thing out.
No, I didn't go to Colbert. I just went to the first day. I can't imagine what he had to say.
It's very confused, frankly. I don't know if Stephen Colbert is really the right guy. A lot of people said he should have turned it down, but he said, "I'm not. If the check clears, I'm here." And of course, he plays, you know, I believe he's a liberal comedian playing a conservative commentator on the Colbert Report. And apparently his talk was a mixture of both. It wasn't really clear. Who he was and so forth. It's really, I understand the need to boycott it. I mean, it really is appalling that they would, for a mere 20 pieces of gold, in effect.
I think essentially you have to go look to the NSA and say, well played, well played.
Yeah.
but I think that is the, I mean, I think we're going to keep on seeing these pieces come out of, you know, this was a perfect situation for the NSA, you know, as far as, you know, what they needed, you know, and being totally tied into what people are assuming is going to be secure.
There was a competing conference, TrustyCon, which I don't know if it really took off, but it was organized by people who said, don't go to the RSA conference. Don't in any way encourage them. The Metreon, where they were supposed to be, was trying to kick them out because RSA warned the Metreon. That's the mall next. We've done stuff with Metreon.
And typically, I mean, this is actually pretty common. Anything that happens in the Moscone Center, they'll pretty much shut down any place that you can have an event anywhere near that. And that's not specific to this. That's specific to any conference. That's kind of a that's part of the not allowing people to set up parallel conferences, which, you know, I have attempted to do myself. So
according to the Bits blog on the New York Times, there were T-shirts made for folks from the Electronic Frontier Foundation featuring the NSA logo, except that the eagle was using its talons to plug into the American telecom network, prominently labeled AT&T. An AT&T executive who was at RSA said, "There are many of us at AT&T who are disturbed by what we've heard at the about the NSA, but when you see those T-shirts, a conversation becomes impossible." And he walked away. There's nothing more to say about it. I just thought I'd mention that. And I was curious if anybody was here for RSA. And, you know, in years past, audience jammed with people here for RSA.
Right.
So I think that's telling. I think that really shows that they've compromised.
It was easy to get a seat there. There were plenty of empty seats at the keynote.
Yeah, that's sad. Breaking news this afternoon from Kara Swisher at Recode. Tony Bates, who was joined Microsoft when Microsoft acquired Skype a couple of years ago, and Tammy Reller, who's executive VP of marketing, leaving the company, according to numerous sources close to the situation. When Satya Nadella was picked as CEO, it's not surprising. We even speculated on Windows Weekly that Tony Bates and others who were in the running might, in fact, leave the company.
Well, they now know where the glass ceiling is for them. I mean, you know, once you have a young CEO, you know that if your plans were to become a CEO at Microsoft, those are
well,
over.
Well, and Tony Bates was a CEO. So, but at Skype, so.
But he, you know, if his path, he's now at the highest point in his path, you know, so. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I wonder, frankly, about Stephen Elop. Any thoughts on that, Farhad?
No, I mean, I think the whole Nokia acquisition seems questionable. I mean, I think that's like the biggest decision that, you know, Nadella will have to make is what to do with the hardware strategy, and I think Nokia plays a big part of that. And I think, you know, if they keep it around or if they keep it as a big part of it, I think that's a good thing for Stephen Elop. So, I mean, you know, he could be ahead of that strategy. But yeah, I mean, it sort of all depends on what their bigger strategy is regarding hardware, regarding smartphone hardware. And, you know, I think that seems still up in the air.
Well, it certainly became a big question this week at Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, where Nokia, still not a Microsoft company, we're waiting for regulatory approval from China, but imminently becoming a Microsoft company. They bought the mobile phone business from Nokia, announced new phones based on Android.
Right.
The Nokia X, the Nokia X Plus, and the Nokia XL look just like Windows phones and use Windows Microsoft services, Bing and OneDrive, but they are based on Android. They don't support the Play Store, although I've seen hacks already that allow you to add the Play Store to these phones. They have a special Nokia store.
Yeah. You know, it's the same strategy.
It seems like a great
Amazon,
idea.
Right? I mean, it's a great idea. It's brilliant. It's the same thing as Amazon Kindle Fire, right? Because Amazon, you know, controls the hardware, but more important, they control the services, they control the stores. and they understand where the money is. And I think Microsoft realizes that operating systems are really not the future of its business. I mean, they've said it over and over again. It's devices and services. And if they can get people to use their services instead of Google services on their devices, then why should they care who wrote the underlying code that's at the bottom of the operating system?
Isn't there a risk, though, Farhad, that this sends a message that Microsoft is not 100% behind Windows Phone, that maybe even Microsoft itself will shift to Android?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that's the risk, but I don't think that's a risk. I think they shouldn't be 100% behind Windows Phone. Windows Phone is a very long shot game, and sort of doing it this way, kind of getting Microsoft services out to people through other operating systems seems like a much smarter play. I mean, it's what every other tech company does. You know, they recognize the Android is going to be around, that iOS is going to be around, and instead of sort of trying to defeat those, they get their services on those platforms. If there was Office for iPad, that would be wonderful for Microsoft.
And there will be. We know that at some point.
It seems like there will be at some point, but the fact that it's been years since we've had the iPad without Office on it is because Microsoft sells operating systems. And if it didn't have that strategy, we would have had Office faster.
Well, and I also think that the Nokia phones are the incredible hardware being held up by its, up until now, being held up by its operating system.
Who of us hasn't said, geez, I'd love to get one of those 1020s or those 1520s if it only ran Android?
Yeah, the folks at Nokia have to be, clamoring at we have to move
over. I'm going to defend Windows Phone, though. I mean, Windows Phone is a great operating system. It's slick, it's fast, it's easy to use. The only negative, as far as I can tell, and I don't use a Windows Phone for this reason, is it just doesn't have the availability, the app availability.
Right. And that's where Android can be. Yeah.
If you were about to buy any phone, the Lumia 1020 is a great thing to choose, but it's not so much better that you can sacrifice the apps that you're getting on the other platform.
Right.
It's just good enough, but then it has this huge shortcoming.
And Elop made a very big deal at the announcement that Android developers are being wooed. He said they can simply move their products right over to the store.
Within hours, they can make it compatible.
So clearly, that's their strategy. Now they've got an operating system or a platform that supports hundreds of thousands of apps, which would take forever on Windows.
You know who I feel sorry for, and fortunately it's a small group, is the Windows Phone developers who are now saying, well, crap. I mean, here we bet on it on this platform, and Microsoft's basically throwing us to the wolves. Mm-hmm. Is it Microsoft? That's the question. It's Nokia. Did Satya Nadella wink and nudge when Stephen Elop said, as he must have, we're going to do this?
Look, he's about to become a Microsoft employee. He'd be crazy if he didn't talk to his overlords or his future overlords.
He's not allowed to, if I'm not mistaken, when an acquisition is in process, he's not allowed to go to the new owner and say, what do you want me to do, sir?
Mm. Right. I mean, I think there must be, but this must have been a long enough term project that they might have known about it before, but, Nadella.
Well, some say that was the threat. That was the threat that Nokia said, if you don't buy us, we're going to make an Android phone.
Right. I mean, it seems like this is a good way to play it, though, right? If you're Nokia and you want to keep the Android, if you want to go into Android, you do it right before the acquisition. So they can't stop you.
and there's plausible deniability.
Right.
Satya can say, well, I didn't know that, and fire
him. Yeah, exactly.
The Nokia, according to Stephen Elop, speaking at the event at Mobile World Congress, the Nokia X is a feeder system for Lumia. Lumia is the Windows Phone version. It takes people to Microsoft's cloud, not Google's cloud. That's one of the big problems, really, is Microsoft wants to be in the platform, the cloud platform business. And Google is a direct competitor on cloud. Forget operating systems. The cloud's where it's all going to happen, right? So it gets people to Microsoft's cloud, not Google's cloud, says Elop. We are deliberately using Android, but substituting Nokia services. This is a gateway to Microsoft. Credible?
Mm-hmm. I think slightly credible. I mean, there's one question, right? Which is, if you get one of these phones and you get a whole bunch of Android apps on it, then like you can't then move to a Windows phone because your Android apps won't work on it. But you will be a part of all the rest of Microsoft services.
Get them hooked on OneDrive, the renamed SkyDrive. Get them hooked on Bing. Get them hooked on Microsoft services. Maybe it won't be such a big transition to leave the Android apps and come to Windows Phone.
Well, but I think that the danger here is that it creates so much uncertainty within the market between people buying the phone, people developing for Windows, people buying Android apps on these phones, that the question is that going to overcome any kind of advantage they were going to get by kind of trying to create some kind of feeder system?
We should also point out, and Paul Theriault was furious. Paul Theriault, he blew his stack on Twitter. But he pointed out that the Lumia 520, which is Nokia's low-cost Windows phone, is pretty much the same specs, the same price. In fact, it's even a little less expensive than a Nokia X. So Nokia already has this gateway drug, this entry level.
And it's one of their best-selling phones.
It's a great phone. Yeah, it's a huge seller worldwide. This is the phone when you hear Stephen Elop and others say, you know, Windows Phone is outselling iPhone in, you know, Market X. This is the phone they're buying in Russia and in India.
Right. I mean, I think their high-end devices aren't doing well at all, but those low-end devices are doing really well. And it's because of, all those countries where, where the low-end devices sell well, and this is sort of competing well against the cheap Android phones.
So question for the panel. Presuming China approves the Nokia acquisition in the next month or so, Nokia becomes part of Microsoft. Does Satya Nadella kill the Nokia X? Farhad?
No, I don't think he kills the Nokia X specifically. I think that they might, I don't know. I think that deciding what to do with Nokia generally will be his first decision, but I don't know. I don't think he kills this project specifically.
Is it going to be kinned? Larry Magid, are they going to kin it?
No, my sense is if they're smart, they will embrace it, and they will really push a Windows-looking UI. They will really approach Microsoft services, and they'll think about the potential to actually really build a platform. I think they'd be, you know, he may be stupid. He may say, hey, wait a minute, it's Windows, you know, all about Windows. But if he's smart, he'll stick with it. I think it's actually a brilliant move. And maybe for legal reasons, Microsoft had nothing to do with it. But I'd like to think they were smart enough to encourage that.
It's jujitsu. Do you think that the Microsoft then drops Windows Phone?
No. I think they continue Windows Phone at the high end.
That's a mess.
But I think ultimately it's gonna wither on the vine.
That's a mess. Microsoft's already bemoaning the multi-OS problem that they're in.
But I think they will. They'll keep. They're not going to kill Windows Phone.
So they have one more OS. What do you think?
Sure. I think they don't kill it eventually, but they eventually kill one of them. You know, like both of them aren't going to last forever. Eventually. They're gonna let them both run for a year or two, and then they're gonna start allowing one of them to, you know, not get updated.
I predict,
but they're gonna add a lot of value to this Android phone. They're gonna make this Android phone look just like Amazon did. It's gonna look and act different enough that it will still have a unique Microsoft signature or a unique Nokia signature on it.
Well, I mean, I think if it starts at the low end, if it starts on their low end devices and they see it doing well, they might expand it up the line. And then if you have a Lumia type phone that comes in Windows and comes in Android, you might get the Android one because, it runs the apps.
All right.
We'll have more from Mobile World Congress, Barcelona, in just a bit. We've got Larry Magid here. Oh, by the way, I didn't give you my prediction. I predict the day that Stephen Elop walks in the door in Redmond, they kill Nokia X immediately. Hmm. It's gone. Microsoft's done it before. The kin lasted 1 month. They don't mind. And I think they kill it immediately. I think, while I agree it's an interesting strategy, it's just too much of a mess. And what's sad is the damage is done. Windows developers are already going to be very nervous about this. You wrote an article, Larry, on LarrysWorld.com, Microsoft's bold new Android strategy. It's it's Nokia's. I'm not sure it's Microsoft's.
No, I'm giving him credit.
we shall see.
Yep.
We shall see.
Give him credit.
Alex Lindsay's also here from the Pixel Corps, pixelcorps.com. Great to have you. And what is this hat? Africa Digital Media Academy. That's your school in Rwanda?
School. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
we'll ask more about that in a bit.
Yep.
Farhad Manju enjoying the free drinks at a doctor's conference in San Diego.
Where free drugs too, right?
Ixnay on the drug tray. He also
be quiet about that.
The OxyContin table in the back, very popular. But more importantly, he writes for the New York Times, where he is now the guy. And Molly Woods joined you, which is awesome. What is Molly going to be doing for you over there?
She's going to be doing similar stuff. She writes about, she's going to be writing reviews. She's going to be
fantastic.
Sort of covering personal tech in the same way.
The Times went through kind of an audition, kind of a Regis and Kelly style audition process, where they had various people taking David Pogue's blog and writing for it. But I'm very pleased with the choices that they've made. It's really good. The Times is, by the way, I should point out, one of the examples Mark Andreessen used just this week as a traditional property that's made the transition to a digital quite well.
Yeah, very well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to say, I just started a few weeks ago, and I had this picture in my mind of people at the New York Times being, you know, like old newspaper people. And I went there, and they were very savvy, smart, digital people, talking about, talking about the web in a way that I imagine, you know, people everywhere else talking. It was just sort of a culture shock. I didn't expect that they wouldn't be kind of wedded to print.
Yeah, isn't that exciting? I want to talk about this Andreessen post on his blog at Andreessen Horowitz, The Future of the News Business, a monumental Twitter stream all in one place. That's the blog post where he mentions that the New York Times is getting it right, among others. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that and a lot more news from Barcelona. There's Bitcoin news. I don't know what to make of that. Maybe one of yous can explain what's going on at Mt. Gox and a lot more. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Stamps.com. I can tell you one thing. You don't want to be going to the post office right about now with the new postage rates. Of course, everybody's going in to buy stamps. If you do mailing for your business, if you do fulfillment for your business, it's crazy to bring a armload of packages to the post office. The cost of the stamp just went to 49 cents, and a lot of people are at the post office to buy new stamps when you could just be sitting at your desk printing out postage like crazy on your computer, your printer. I'm not talking a postage meter. I'm not talking special links. I'm talking stamps.com. With stamps.com, you actually pay less for postage than you will at the post office. Whether it's first-class mail, priority, or priority mail express packages, they have discounts you can't get at the post office. It's very easy, too. You actually can print if you want. They have the labels to print stamps or whatever. You don't have to go to the post office. But you can also print right on the envelope. So if you do mailers in your business or invoices, your logo, the return address is automatically added. The address for the recipient is taken from your QuickBooks. It just spits them out. It couldn't be easier. And, of course, the postage is printed right on it. They keep the rates up to date. There's no additional charge. You know, sometimes these postage meters actually charge you to update the cost of postage in the postage meter. That's crazy. If you're shipping packages, it'll do the labels effect. I'm going to show you how you can get the USB scale. You put the package on the scale. It automatically prints the right postage, the right label. It even does things like calculate the costs to do Priority Express. If it's international, it'll fill out the forms for you. And then you still don't have to go to the post office with this armload of packages. The mail carrier comes and gets it. And I don't know if you know this. I found out when I was mailing some books out. The post office, if it's more than 13 ounces, you're supposed to bring it in so they can look in you in the eye and you look suspicious. Not with Stamps.com, because of the way Stamps.com works. They trust you. They come. They get it. There's even a big button on your Stamps.com software that says, get the mail carrier out here, even if you missed the pickup. I love it. I want you to try it. We use it here. Just go to Stamps.com and you'll see a special $80 value. Don't fall for that. Click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. We can make this better. Please use our offer code TWIT, and that $80 special no-risk trial turns into a $110 bonus value. You're going to get $55 in free postage to use over the first few months as a Stamps.com customer. We will throw in that digital scale. It's worth $50. You do pay shipping and handling. I think it's about $5 on that. But they make it up with a $5 supply kit and, of course, a four-week free trial of Stamps.com. Please go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and use the offer code TWIT. And stop going to the post office. Start using stamps.com. You're watching Twit this week in tech. Samsung scared us a little bit. Their Galaxy, or their, I guess they call it Unpacked 5 event, which was earlier this week in Barcelona at the Mobile World Congress, started 7 p.m. in Barcelona, first day of the Congress. People are tired, with a chamber music orchestra playing soporific music to the assembled journalists. Farhad, you didn't go to Barcelona this year.
No, I didn't go. Yeah,
I would have been asleep. And I was reason I was worried is because after that horrible Broadway show that they did for the Galaxy S4, which you were at that one, Larry?
I was in New York for that. Yeah, that was a bizarre
nightmare. I thought symphony orchestra. I'm thinking, oh boy, here we go again. I was just waiting for them to roll the sets on stage.
So they went in the other direction.
Very tight set.
Yep.
They just it was simple. They had their executives come out. They showed the Galaxy S5. They didn't show very much of the Galaxy S5. No. They showed none of the software features, and they were done in 45 minutes.
Yep. And they streamed it, which was nice.
Yeah. We did our live coverage of that. Actually, we had gotten up early in the morning. We were there 11:30 p.m., Mike Elgin and I covering the Nokia event as well. I thought Stephen Elop knocked it out of the park. He was concise. Yep. He did it all in 45 minutes, announced 5 new phones in 45 minutes, was able to
and
position.
And talked about gear.
Yeah, and was able to position them quite well. Samsung did announce new watches as well. They don't call them the Galaxy Gears anymore, just the Gears. There's the Gear Neo, which I guess is basically like the old Gear. There's the Gear, and then the Gear Fit.
Fitness, which has got to look better than this. I mean, it looks. This is the
You're Fitbit. Wearing a Gear? Oh, you got a Fitbit.
Compare the Gear is so much classier than this.
I thought the Gear Fit was pretty nice.
Yeah, it was very nice. I want to get one of those.
So it's
Well, I think in a lot of ways the Gear Fit looks a lot like some of the rumors for where, you know, the directions that Apple
looks a lot
was
going, doesn't it? Yeah. With the curved Super AMOLED screen. It's a fitness watch. Now,
the old Gear, by the way. This is the one that they're replacing.
This is the ugly old Gear. Compare.
It's actually not bad. It still looks better than the Fitbit, but the new Gear is much, much nicer looking. I don't have it yet.
They don't have the camera anymore in the new Gear, though.
No, there is a camera. In the old Gear, the camera is in the, I don't know if you can see it, it's in the band.
It looks like a suction cup coming out of the band.
The problem is that means you're locked into this band. You can't swap out the band because the camera's there. The new Gear, I believe the camera is actually in the body of the watch itself, which means you can sub out the
How
band.
Do you see
what you're shooting?
Yeah, what you're shooting.
You don't. Yes, you just kind of roughly do this.
Yeah, okay. You wear it like this and you kind of
smile. Yeah. It also has its own memory, which is nice so that you can put music on it for, what did they say, 4 gigs of memory? So you can put music on it. You don't have to have the phone if you're working out with it. This is the Gear Fit, the curved. Oh no, I'm sorry. That's the Huawei. Let me go back a little bit. This is the Gear Neo.
Did they announce prices on the Gear, on any of the Gear equipment?
They did not. In fact, they didn't announce prices on anything or availability on anything.
Yeah, I want to know what the Gear Fit's going to cost.
I think they implied it would be less than the old Gear. Well, did they not? Did J.K. Shin not say for less? Something like that.
Well, the Fit ought to be less since it's not a full fledged smartwatch. I mean, it should definitely be. It should be 200 or less.
It's better looking. Yeah. That's for sure. And then the S5. And what we've also learned, even though they didn't talk about all the companion software, the TouchWiz stuff, that there's even less free space in the Galaxy S5 than there was in the Galaxy S4. The S4 came with roughly 9 gigs free out of 16. If you buy a 16 gig S5, you'll have 8 gigs free. Hmm. That only means more cruft to me.
Now, did we talk about the OS on the
Yeah, so the watches are not Android, they're Tizen.
Right.
This is their internal developed operating system.
Right.
I mean, my problem with Galaxy Gear is you have to marry it with a Samsung Galaxy phone. I mean, if I could use Galaxy Gear on my choice of phones, I'd be a lot happier with it. I actually wore the Galaxy Gear to CES and I described it as $1,000 pedometer because that was all I used it for. And between the Gear and the phone that you needed to use it, it was $1,000 investment.
Do you like the Pebble better? The Pebble at least is open. You can use it on any phone.
Yeah, I do like it better. Well, for that reason. For that reason, I like it. I mean, that if I were going to buy a smartwatch, that's the one I would buy at this very moment because you can use it on any phone.
Would you buy one?
No.
I bought one, but that was because it was on Kickstarter and I didn't know any better.
Yeah.
Right. I buy everything on Kickstarter. I'm kind of a Kickstarter sucker.
You can buy a pedometer for $10, and for my practical purposes, that's about all I use these things for.
My Pebble's in the in the drawer. Someday I'll find it. Chad wants it. Someday I'll figure out what drawer it's in, and I'm gonna bequest it. It'll be a bequest to Chad in my will. And to Chad Johnson, my loyal employee, I give...
The guy who runs the video switchboard during Twit, he gets my Pebble that I don't really want. I think it's a piece of...
Old Pebble watch. Use it in good health, Chad. Farhad, do you wear any of these watches or bands or anything?
I do not. I had a Fitbit for... I had a couple of Fitbits for a while, and I lost each one.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
But I think I liked the Fitbit best of all of them, mostly because it seemed like the least hassle-free. But even that, like the fact that after I lost them, I didn't replace them because they just weren't adding that much to my life.
I actually just found them. The funny thing is I lost this thing for – the problem with the Fitbit is they come with these ridiculous – I don't know if you can see this. They come with these clasps that break.
Yeah.
And so I swapped out Velcro. Which actually works better.
Oh, God, that's even worse.
But it
looks even more nerdy, if possible.
It works better.
I have used duct tape. So I heard, though, that you could send that back and they'll give you a nickel. No, wait a minute. That's wrong. They have nickel, then they'll make your skin itch. And and if you send it to them in 8 weeks, they'll send you a
But, you know, it is amazing that you could have an incredibly high-tech product and screw it up with an incredibly bad low-tech band. I mean, you'd think they would. Apple would not get that wrong.
So is Apple is Apple going to release one of these things? Everybody's rumoring this.
They've got a lot of people working there on it. So I mean, the rumors are, I mean, they have 50 or 60 people working on it.
It'd be embarrassing if they don't.
Like but you know, there've definitely been reports. I mean, Apple has definitely worked on things where they do they spend $100 million on something or $50 million on R&D and then they throw it away because they've decided it's not what they want. So I mean, it's definitely possible for Apple to work on something they're not going to release if they can't find a compelling solution, but they have an awful lot of people working on it.
Is there such a thing as being too late to the party, or does Apple get to reinvent the party no matter when they come in?
They're very late for the phone party and seem to work out okay for them.
Right. Yes, I think they get to reinvent this. I mean, especially if theirs is much better and offers a compelling reason to use it. But that's the hard part, right? The offering enough here that you want to keep using it all the time. That's something that I haven't found with any of these devices. They seem kind of cool for the first 3 or 4 days, and then you get tired of them.
The other problem I have is that, the other watch that I occasionally wear when I travel internationally, I think the battery lasts 10 years. And the fact you have to one more thing to manage and keep charging, I don't know, that just somehow doesn't work for me for a watch. I want a watch I don't want to have to manage my watch and remember to plug it in.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, having so many devices to keep charging is the worst thing now. I mean, a laptop, an iPhone or a phone.
iPad.
I barely have a tablet charged anymore because it's just another thing.
It does mean it's hard to get home. At the end of the day, the get home ritual becomes very much more elaborate where you take everything out of your pockets and you plug it in.
And the other thing that kills me is, at least on most of these things, they have proprietary chargers.
Oh, yeah.
So I haven't lost my devices, but I've actually lost the chargers, which means I may as well throw away the devices. And if they could only at least come up with a micro USB or something non-proprietary, that would help. But, I can't manage all of these charging stations and cables. I mean, it's too mind-boggling.
I know for me, if it's not micro USB and it's not the Lightning that Apple makes, I pretty much won't. I just won't buy it. Those are the only two that I have in my bag now at this point.
Exactly. So. Well, these have micro USB, but you still need the proprietary charger to get actually into the watch itself. Same thing with the Samsung Gear. It's a proprietary cradle that you have to remember to bring with you.
So you can't just plug it into it. You really can't just plug the micro USB into a charger and it won't charge it at all?
No. I've lost the cradle too. That's the problem with these things. Companies send me these things and they want them back. And I gladly send them back, but I've always lose all the pieces that goes with them.
Right. So. Chad made a real point. If I give him the Pebble, I have to give him the charger. I can't promise that, Chad.
It's a request.
I promised
Alex
the charger. he's in my will for the. And to
I'm
Alex
one of the Mac
Lindsay,
Pro. I was waiting for the Mac Pro.
I can bequeath a Pebble charger. Talk to Chad if you want to work together.
I think for this internet, the Internet of Things would really take off if we had, you know, widespread compatible wireless charging.
Do you guys like Qi? Do you guys like wireless charging like Qi?
It's not great, but it's okay. I mean, it works when you have it nearby. But like if wireless charging worked everywhere, if I had like a wireless charger thing in my car and at like every coffee shop, and you could just put stuff down on a table and it would work.
I think we should just send massive inductance waves throughout the whole world all the time, and things would just charge.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what we should do here at the Brick House Studios.
Didn't Edison?
Then we'll all have cancer in 4 years, but our stuff will be charged.
Right.
Well, wasn't it Edison that claimed that Tesla's technology was going to electrocute all of us?
Yeah, didn't he kill an elephant? Who killed the elephant? Tesla killed the elephant. Edison killed the elephant.
Edison killed the elephant with Tesla's technology.
That's right.
An enormous amount of it. It's kind of like, so.
I'll never forgive him for that. speaking of elephants, the self-described conservative think tank NCPPR came to the Apple shareholders meeting and demanded that Apple disclose the cost of its sustainability programs, that they be more transparent about their participation in hippie liberal ideology. They didn't say that, but might as well have.
That's what they were thinking.
Tim Cook said, if you don't like it, stop investing in Apple. He said, there are many things Apple does because they're right and just. Return on investment is not the primary consideration on such issues. I don't know if there's video of it. I want to see it. He says, when we work on making our devices accessible by the blind, I don't consider the bloody ROI. I think he was pretty angry.
Yeah. Good for him.
Yeah. His body language changed, according to the Mac Observer. His face contracted. He spoke in rapid-fire sentences. He's kind of a southerner, so he doesn't. That's unusual. He also looked directly at the NCPPR representative and said, if you want me to do things only for return on investment, you should get out of this stock.
I think Apple needs to say that more often.
Wow. Get out of my stock.
I think you could also make a good argument that it does help the stock. I mean, it helps sell our products. That these are premium products. You want them. I mean, the kind of people who buy them, you know, think about those kinds of things. And if you turned out that, you know, these were like horribly polluting, but you were still paying like a premium price for them, people would wonder about that.
I think argument to be made in the opposite direction, that Apple, in fact, is pretending to be eco-friendly when, in fact, it's not.
That's
for every
too,
Republican complaining, there's probably 10 eco-activists standing out in front complaining Apple isn't doing enough. Yeah. So
some of those trade organizations are run by Apple.
Right.
I don't know. You know, let's face it. This stuff is crap. It's ruining the environment. They're made by slave labor. What are we going to do?
It's a dirty business. I think it's continually getting better, but it's pretty messy.
We should call him to task. And I'm glad that Tim.
And I think the people. I think more and more. When you look at social media, when you look at the decentralized media, you know, process. I think that it is more important than ever for companies to have the glow of them at least trying to do the right thing or at least moving in that direction. I don't think that they can't just spin it with a handful of media organizations and have it all go the right direction anymore. They have to actually keep on moving down this path or it will affect their bottom line.
Right. And there are plenty of people keeping an eye out for that. So, you know, they can't get away with too much these days with all the activist groups out there watching them. And I say good for the activist groups. But too bad we don't have Pornell on the show. He'd probably be.
Oh, he's
it.
Yeah, he's to, yeah. You know, I can channel him. As Robert Heinlein once told me, you guys are full of poop. We love Jerry.
Yes,
we love Jerry, and we try not to get too political here. But Jerry would probably have something to say.
Right.
There is a new book. I don't know. I haven't looked at the excerpts of this book. I saw it on Jim Dalrymple's The Loop. There's a new book out, I think by Wall Street Journal writer, about Apple. I actually like the name. Let me see if I can find this here. Something like Haunted House, Haunted Empire, Apple After Steve Jobs. The author, Yukari Kane. Do you know her, Farhad?
I don't know her personally. She was at the Journal until recently. She left to write this book. Yeah.
Dalrymple says the excerpt is well written. It's certainly interesting. My only gripe is it seems a little one sided and one dimensional. It dehumanizes Tim Cook. Focuses on anecdotes that paint him as a harsh taskmaster. I think if you're the CEO, go ahead.
I didn't think so. I read that excerpt and I thought it was really interesting. I thought that I learned more about Tim Cook from it. Particularly, it sort of filled out this. The kind of the stereotype public image that we have of him is that he's very like sober and level-headed compared to Steve Jobs, but kind of a little bit soulless. And this made him seem less soulless. I didn't know this. One of the first things he did at Apple was to start a charity matching program.
That's right.
When he became CEO, which is something that Jobs had long ignored.
More than ignored, refused to do. He did not want to get involved in corporate giving at all.
Yeah. I thought the excerpt was really good. I look forward to reading that book.
Meetings with Cook, she writes, could be terrifying. He exuded a zen-like calm and didn't waste words. Talk about your numbers. Put your spreadsheet up, he'd say, as he nursed a Mountain Dew. I like touches like that. Yeah. Some staffers wondered why he wasn't bouncing off the walls from the caffeine. When Cook turned the spotlight on someone, he hammered them with questions until he was satisfied. Why is that? What do you mean? I don't understand. Why are you not making it clear? He was known to ask the same question 10 times in a row. They call him, or he called himself, the Attila the Hun of inventory. But that's was he was always known as a brilliant operations guy.
Yeah.
And I have now I read the Brad Stone's book about Amazon, the Everything Store. It's very similar stuff, you know. Claims that Jeff Bezos would browbeat employees and say, you're ruining my company. I've heard the same thing from Steve Jobs many times.
Oh, legendary.
legendary.
It seems to me maybe to run a big company like this, you kind of have to do that.
Well, I think that you definitely have to create some movement and energy. I mean, you know, it's I think that if you're running any company,
And call people on the carpet, make them responsible for their stuff. You can't just say, well, you missed your goals this week. That's okay.
Right.
Come back next week. I don't know. I do that to my employees. Right, Chad? That Pebble watch is on the line, Johnson. Just remember.
You're not here on time. You're ruining this company. I need the Pebble.
Have I ever said to you, you're ruining my company?
No.
No.
Yeah.
Lisa, have I ever said that to you? Never mind. She could answer yes. As long as we're talking Jim Dalrymple at The Loop, he has squashed the idea that Apple might have a new Apple TV. We've been talking about it quite a bit. He quotes Salvador Rodriguez in the LA Times saying that this $25 iTunes gift card being offered right now at, I think, Target is part of a promotion that could signal a new Apple TV is on its way, to which Dalrymple says, nope. So there you have it. It's official.
Interesting.
Nope.
Well, the question is simply, can Apple do anything that really changes the nature of TV in a way that we're all going to say, wow?
I don't think they're talking about a television set. I think they're talking about a new Apple Puck.
A new.
Yeah. No, I think we've all agreed now that the television set was somebody's fever dream.
Why would they do a new Apple TV set-top box? The one they have now is pretty much perfect, and they can always just update it to add more features. Right.
They need to clean up the UI, because what's happening is as you add these channels, you're getting page after page of channels.
But that's software.
Right.
I can do that.
But that's just
easy.
Software, right?
Yeah, that's easy. Yeah.
I think that also I'm very interested, I mean, beyond whatever we're using it for now for updates or people use it for hacks, the USB connector is, to me, very interesting in the app.
It still does nothing, right?
Still does nothing. And, I mean, the thing is that I think that there are a lot of opportunities, whether this Apple TV can handle it or not. I mean, we have to remember, number one, is this Apple TV is basically an iOS box. So, I think the idea of opening up games, for instance, who cares about the media stuff immediately, but you open up games on the platform where your iPhones are controlling, our controllers. I mean, Apple is like 2 inches away from doing that.
Yeah,
but
we've been saying that since the thing came out.
I know. But I think that these are the things that I think that they could still be doing that could move forward. I think that also being able to hook up a webcam to my Apple TV and being able to use my TV as a way to talk to my grandparents is very compelling.
Right. Yeah.
I think Google is way ahead of them on that. I think that
it's Microsoft.
Yeah.
In the sense of the Xbox One.
Right. Right. And I think that they're getting, and those ones are much more expensive, much more, that process is much more expensive to get into. I mean, having something that's inexpensive that doesn't do much more than that, I think is a much more, compelling solution. I mean, obviously there's manufacturers that are building these cameras into their TVs, but I think that right now there's, in my opinion, only one sensor that you want to have on a webcam. So, the only people that have figured it out is Logitech.
But what surprised me is Apple TV apparently did about $1 billion or more than $1 billion worth of business in 2013. So it is more than a hobby. I mean, they're actually selling these things and making real money.
And they have a whole section now that they've opened up. I mean, obviously they've changed their store. I mean, it seems like it becomes less of a hobby when you start giving it a whole section. It seems like they're going to start moving something down that.
Yeah, and I wonder if
that was the weirdest news story of the week 2 weeks ago. Apple adds tab to website. What does it mean?
Well, I mean, it definitely means that it's a lot more serious than just a hobby.
You know? Yes. I mean, I think we maybe are watching Apple a little too closely when we start saying, oh, look, there's a new tab in the store.
Isn't that the soda that came out before Diet Coke, tab, or am I?
Yeah, that's it. Fresca. There's a new horrible. Fresca. Shop Apple TV. Gosh. You're going to need more popcorn. So Apple's offering the $25 gift card as well. I don't know why there's a tab, because all they sell is the Apple TV and a cable in this particular section.
That's why it doesn't make any sense, and that's why people are paying attention to it, is because it's you think that they're going to add more.
What? What could they add? I don't
Accessories.
Know. All right. Let's take a break. Come back with more. Farhar Manju is here. He is, of course, now in charge of the Bits blog. Are you in charge of the Bits blog? Are you the star of the Bits blog?
No, I contribute to the Bits blog. But
he contributes to the Bits blog. He's Mr. Digital at the New York Times, and a very, very good hire, if you ask me. It's great to have you on after all this time, Farhad. As I said before the show, a huge fan. You've probably been the most quoted on Twit for years. Yeah. Anybody who gets in a fight with Frank Shaw...
yes, exactly.
...gets my vote. Right. Frank Shaw, the communications guy. Actually, what is he? Is he the marketing guy at Microsoft? What is head of communications?
He's the head PR guy. Yeah.
He wrote you a nasty letter. What's that all about?
I don't know. I think he hadn't totally thought it out.
he apparently wanted to put it in the commenting system at the Times for your first column. Which was a great column in which you'd said, which I agree, how to survive in the future, of mass extinctions in technology. The best bet is Apple hardware, iPhones, iPads, and Macs, Google services, Gmail, Maps, and Search, and buy your media from Amazon, movies, books, and music, which I completely agree with and have been doing for years. Those seem to be the three, and they interoperate. You're not stuck in anybody's ecosystem. The Amazon movies will work everywhere. You also said Dropbox was good, but no Microsoft on that list. And I think Frank did.
Right, he got a little angry at that.
Frank said, why? Why?
The funny thing was his response was, he was saying that I was betting on the big guys. But, he was kind of.
We're just the little guy. Yeah, the underdog.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, little old Microsoft. Don't forget us.
Mom and Pop Microsoft.
If your mom and pop are Steve Ballmer and Bill Gates. I love that. I think your column was right on. And I just think it's cool that Frank Shaw wrote you a letter saying.
Yeah.
Was it like on paper?
It was not on paper. Oh, no. Okay. I did not get the paper version.
Okay.
But he did call me. I talked to him on the phone.
All right. Welcome to the big leagues.
Thanks.
That's when you know. When you get on the Microsoft enemies list. Larry Magid's been there for years. Larry Magid writes and talks for CBS News. And, of course, you can go to larrysworld.com to see all of his stuff. Great to have you, Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Corps, who's never received a heated note from anyone.
Well, no comment.
Because they all love you, Alex.
I spent a long time in the Apple penalty box.
Did you?
Yeah. No.
Yeah, a little back and forth with Steve.
You know, you're nothing if you haven't spent time in the penalty box.
Yeah, I go back and forth on that box too. It's a rite of passage.
Yeah, I haven't been in it a long time, but it was in the early days.
Congratulations.
I saw you indirectly quoted. Where was that? Because they referred to the fact that Steve Jobs was known to fire people on elevators. And as far as I know, you're the one and only source of that anecdote.
No. I don't think I was the source of that anecdote.
It wasn't you. No. Yeah, okay.
You can say it. And the rumor is that you only fired one.
One guy.
It was one guy.
One
worked
guy.
On some team. Yeah. I don't, there's, you know, there's lots of colorful.
Colorful stories.
I had a, there was a guy at Pixar that said he'd been fired by Steve like three times.
Yeah.
The person at Pixar that would follow behind him just going, just go back to work.
Just
never remember, you know.
He's just that way. Yeah. We're going to get him a Snickers bar. He'll be much better later. Our show today brought to you by Warby Parker. Well, let me show you my Warbies. So if you know, if I say to you, you could buy glasses online, you might say, well, that's crazy
talk. I need to buy glasses. My kids just snapped mine in half.
Right. There are, you know, I got to tell you, I don't want to name names, but there's one big company that really pretty much owns everybody.
Right.
And their monopoly keeps prices high. Warby Parker is about to change all that. A startup has decided that you can buy glasses online. You can get away from overpriced bland eyewear for amazing prices if you don't participate in that. And this is Warby Parker. Glasses start at $95. That includes the prescription lenses. And you might say, well, I can't do this at home. How am I going to do this at home? This is how they get around it. This is the Warby Parker try-on kit.
You know, I need this because I'm not kidding. My kids killed my glasses.
Yeah, so go to Warby. Look at all the glasses. They've got some new ones that are really fantastic.
Do they do bifocals or whatever? You know what you have?
Oh, yeah. Of course. And by the way, $95 includes anti-reflective and anti-glare coating, a hard case, and a cleaning cloth. It's not some budget thing. So what they do is this is the free home try-on program. 5 days to try 5 pairs. What you do is go to Warby, go through all of their different glasses. They have glasses for men and women. Really some nice designer. In fact, look at the new spring line. 8 new shapes, 6 new colors, all kinds of moods. So I picked a few. And I got them, and they come in this nice little case.
Awesome.
With the return postage and everything, so you can send it back. And then you try them on, and you know.
They're not the prescription there. That's just the try-on.
No, these are just, they're clear.
But then they build the glasses for you.
Yeah, and you pick out.
Oh, that's nice.
A little small.
Yeah. Mr. Johnson, I wish to speak to you about your productivity.
That's not going to work. I like these. Those are good.
Those are very nice.
I look like an intellectual.
Yes.
Yes. Smart fella. Yeah. Anyway, you try them on. I don't know.
IQ points.
Huh? This adds 20 IQ just by wearing them.
I mean, you upload your prescription to them and then they build it for you?
Yeah. So you pick the glasses you want. You pack it back up. Send it back to them. Returns are fine. Even, you know, after you do this, for 30 days, you can return anything you want. Very nice selection. They partner with nonprofits like Vision Spring to give pairs to people in need, which is nice. When you buy glasses, for every pair of glasses you buy from Warby Parker, they're going to give another pair to somebody who needs them. It's great. They have a place where you can take the photos of it and share your pictures with people and say, what do you think? The special frame box, prepaid shipping label, and everything, it's all absolutely free. So I want you to visit warbyparker.com. I've been trying to get the monocle. The monocle, I think, is out of stock. They sell a monocle, and I really want that. We've been trying, right? Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, Leo. I mean, not to kind of hone in on your advertisement, but this notion of disrupting, you know, how different industries are being disrupted.
That's what I love about the internet. Yes.
I mean, there's so many industries that are just having to change.
So let's disintermediate. Let's break this monopoly. And 500,000 glasses now have been distributed to people in need thanks to Warby, which is really, I just think, a wonderful idea. Buy a pair, give a pair. So I invite you to go warbyparker.com. They do have storefronts in New York, L.A., and Boston, so you can go see the glasses if you'd like in person. But I think the whole idea of the free home try-on. To me, I want to buy everything online. I don't want to buy anything.
Yeah.
I don't want to go. I don't want to get out of my chair. This is a great idea.
Not that we're lazy or anything.
Great little startup, warbyparker.com. In fact, Do we have a deal? Let me see. Wait a minute. Go back to the ad here.
I hope we have a deal because I'm on the site. I go.
We always have a deal.
My little try-ons.
Where's the deal? Go to warbyparker.com/twit. Ah, you get 3-day shipping free on your frame. Please give them a try. I think you will like them. Mark Andreessen, who I don't normally think of as a media critic. He's the guy who created, of course, Netscape. Before it, he was a student, a graduate student at the University of Illinois Urbana, the National Center for Supercomputing Applications, wrote Mosaic. Was it Mosaic?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's it. I remember the day.
Yeah.
Well, not the day, but I remember when he did it.
I remember the day. I remember because Mosaic was the first browser to support animated GIFs.
Now, I remember when I first saw it, I was blown away by it. I mean, I thought, oh, my God, this changes. You know, I had just written a book called Larry Magid's Guide to the New Digital Highways and exciting products like Source and the CompuServe.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And in the Unix, the Internet, which was all Unix, and to see a graphical interface.
It's mind-boggling.
It was mind-boggling.
Remember, the backgrounds were all gray, which was weird, right? Didn't have white. I don't know why. It gets easier on the eyes. And then I remember the first time I saw, I remember very well, the first animated GIF I ever saw, it was a compass, and the needle was turning. And it was, so I'd been used to static text. And all of a sudden, I'm looking at a web page, and the needle's turning. I'm going, well, that's bizarre, but it blew me away.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, Mark then, of course, starts Netscape, the big IPO in 97, I think, which was the beginning of the Internet bubble, made a little money. He's now a venture capitalist, Andreessen Horowitz, and a very outspoken one, has been engaged in a Twitter debate, 140 characters at a time, over the future of journalism.
That's a lot of Twittering.
It's really good, and he engaged a lot of people. It was really PMARCA is his I'm not sure what the P stands for. Maybe his first name is Paul, really, and his P Marca, anyway. But he finally wrote a blog post, thank goodness, on the future of the news business. A monumental Twitter stream all in one place. But he talks about, and I think he's right. He says, I'm more bullish about the future of the news industry over the next 20 years than almost anyone else I know. You will see it grow 10 to 100 times what it is today. Hmm. And, boy, people have been bemoaning the future of journalism. This to me, is really good news. And while I don't think he is necessarily, you know, a brilliant media analyst, I think he's right on in almost everything he says. He says distribution is going from thanks to the internet, going from locked down to completely open. Anyone can create and distribute. There's no monetary premium for control of distribution anymore. That was the thing that kept a lot of publishers in business. Formerly separate industries are colliding on the internet. It's newspaper versus magazine versus broadcast TV versus cable TV versus wire service. They all compete, and those two factors drive down prices at the same time. Market size is exploding. And this is the one people might disagree with, but I agree with 100%. We are essentially a news operation. More people are consuming news now than they were before.
And Leo, you are actually one of the poster children. I've actually had conversations with media executives from great big networks who are absolutely amazed how you were able to build your own network without having to sign up with one of the big ones. So, you know, just like you were saying earlier, the brand can be the individual or the small business no longer need. I mean, I happen to be associated with CBS, which is one of the big networks, but you don't absolutely need that to have an audience anymore.
And this came up before the show where I was talking to Farhad saying, I can't remember where I read your stuff, but I read your stuff. So I remember your name and read your stuff, and don't tell the Times this, but it's really where it is on the web is secondary to the actual content. Right. And that is very... Go ahead.
It's because I can promote my stuff on Twitter and Facebook, mm-hmm. and that I think is sort of the key advantage for people like me. But it's also, I mean, I think the big question that Mark didn't address. I mean, I mostly agree with what he says. I mostly am more bullish now on the media than I've ever been, and like it's always been this kind of doom and gloom business. And I think for the first time, it doesn't feel that way. But I do worry about the power of Facebook and the power of Twitter, yes. Less than that, mostly the power of Facebook, because Facebook can sort of kill entire industries by itself. I mean, everybody that I know who works in web publishing, they get a huge percentage of their traffic from Facebook. And if that turns off, which, you know, Facebook has been known to do various changes to its algorithm, you know, that affects their business profoundly. So
that's just ask Upworthy.
Yeah, exactly.
Although I can't say I'm crying over the loss of traffic to Upworthy. In fact, you can blame Upworthy because they carefully crafted what they were doing for to precisely game Facebook, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they, like a lot of people, kind of determined that they could crack the code, and they did. They cracked the code, and then Facebook changed the code.
Right.
And I think that's the danger there for all these sites.
Well, I think in the end, what really matters is creating great content. I mean, you can definitely try to engineer ways to get better search results on Google or get better search results on Facebook. But in the end, I think most of the upstart organizations that have not been part of the mainstream media that are doing well, what they do more than anything else is consistently create great content and find ways to interact with with their readers, with their viewers, with their followers.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, I think they create great content and also are doing – the other thing that Mark focused a lot on is experimentation in the business model. So, in the past, there was just basically one way to pay for media. Now there's a whole bunch of different ways beyond advertising.
I think that's the thing that is really the most interesting in this post. I agree.
Yeah.
He says advertising, and of course we're ad-supported, so I agree with that. But he also points out subscriptions, a paid tier of premium content on top of free ad-supported content, conferences and events. That's what TechCrunch mm-hmm. does so well. Cross-media. He says, Tina Brown was right, but too early with Talk News is a key source of material for books, TV, and film, which also happen to be growth businesses. So, in other words, you can take advantage of other businesses' need for your content. Crowdfunding is huge right now. I look at Patreon just raised $21 million. This is a crowdfunding platform for podcasts and other similar audio content. Bitcoin for micropayments. And then he also points out philanthropy, and that's of course Pierre Omidyar throwing $250 million into his startup. Although I'm not sure that's philanthropy. That may be.
Yeah, I think he wants to make money from that.
Yeah,
I
mean, that might be a business. Yeah. And Jeff Bezos, it's definitely not charity to buy the Washington Post. On the other hand, ProPublica clearly is philanthropic in nature. It's exciting. He points out a number of very successful. He says, people and companies are doing it right. Anand Tech, The Atlantic, BuzzFeed, I might disagree on that. The Guardian, for sure.
Yeah.
Politico, Search Engine Land, The Verge, Vice, Wirecutter, Wired. He mentions his own investments. And then he also mentions, and finally, The New York Times. It's great to see the Times has evidently cracked the code on the transition from print to digital after extremely hard effort. So I think that very interesting blog post. And, the issue is, and the chat rooms raised this absolutely, it's not that the distribution that exists or the means of funding exists. Well, the issue is quality. And I agree with you, Farhad. The risk is that companies like Facebook become so powerful in determining what is news that they can undermine the quality equation. I think Google's safe because Google's kind of algorithmic and, when you say it's content, Google absolutely surfaces content. But we don't know what Facebook and Mark are.
But again, what you see people do is they'll try to manipulate Google's algorithms, and over time, Google will figure it out. And you cannot build a business around manipulating algorithms. You can build a business around eventually. I think we found that was a problem for bankers too. Manipulating
the difference between Google and Facebook is that Google is very transparent about. I mean, they have this whole arm that, talks to webmasters about what works, what doesn't, what not to do, what you can do. And Facebook is very opaque. Like, they just change the algorithm, the newsfeed algorithm.
Yeah, you don't know what
they do. Kind of willy-nilly. And they don't really, talk to publishers as much about what not to do and what you should be doing.
No, look at Matt Cutts at Google, who spends a lot of energy saying, here's what to do.
Well,
I actually experimented in actually promoting a couple of my posts, paying the $7. And as far as I could tell, it had absolutely no impact on the number of people who liked it or commented on it.
You're talking about Facebook's?
They think anybody can pay $7 to have a post promoted. So I tried it a couple of times just to see what would happen, and it had zero impact, I mean, as far as I could tell.
There was a great YouTube video. I wish he had written it because we could then talk about it, but you have to watch it. What is that, Chad? Veritas?
Yeah, Veritasum Day or Veritasum. Something like that.
So he did a really interesting experiment where he bought Facebook likes, you know, spent that money, and then created a number of fake Facebook pages that nobody would ever really like. and then tried buying likes and so forth. But the key finding, I think, when you can buy likes from Facebook, you can buy likes from third parties. Right. If you buy likes through third parties, you're going to illegal click farms. Basically, they hire people in mostly in poor nations to click likes, right? And you can buy 1,000, 5,000. They're very cheap. He then says he used Facebook's own algorithm. Here he is, Derek Mueller. He used Facebook's own algorithm. And what he found was that it's actually, there it is, Virtual Bagels Limited. It's fake. He actually, 4,000 likes on something that doesn't even exist because he bought them. He then played around with not buying likes. And what he found out is that the actual buying likes is actually a very bad idea. And it hurts everybody because what happens is Facebook's algorithm, apparently, its news algorithm, surfaces posts based on engagement.
Right.
If you were going to put it in a capsule, it's engagement. And, of course, these fake likes, and it's, by the way, percent of engagement related to the number of likes. So these fake likes build up your likes, but would generate zero engagement. So as a result, posts from those pages never surface.
Right. Mm.
And here's the real risk. As a real page, these click farms, in order to look like they aren't click farms, have to go around randomly liking other pages.
Right.
So he found that even when he didn't buy likes, he got a lot of likes from click farms. And that those phony, spurious likes hurt his engagement, hurt his posts. Hmm. So it's ruining the Facebook ecosystem. That you could buy likes at all has ruined the ecosystem by creating this whole market of third-party click farms.
Interesting.
Not sure it's Facebook's fault, but it is definitely a problem.
But I have noticed, I mean, I've never been able to quite predict what will surface. I mean, I'll post something and one day I'll get, you know, hundreds of likes and comments, and I'll post something the next day and I'll only get 10 or 20. And I have not quite figured out what it is that causes, I mean.
Facebook needs a Matt Cutts.
It's what?
Yeah.
Facebook needs Matt Cutts.
Yeah.
Somebody who will
more transparent,
step forward and say, here's how we're doing it.
Yeah. I mean, I think I know lots of people who don't understand this very basic thing about Facebook, which is that when you post something, not everyone who is your friend sees it. Like, people don't understand that it's basically that there's this algorithm that filters it.
I don't think anybody except people who watch these kinds of shows knows that.
Yeah.
Your family doesn't. Your mom assumes that if I posted it, Farhad saw it.
Right.
Not at all. Farhad said a lot of buzzworthy and upworthy BuzzFeed and Upworthy posts instead.
Yeah.
Apple is retiring Snow Leopard from support. 1 in 5 Macs now vulnerable to attacks. Apple joining Microsoft. And what a world we live in. Microsoft, April 8th, Microsoft is abandoning Windows XP, guaranteeing it will be, you know, Windows XP users will become a hotbed of illegal activity. And now Snow Leopard, which is frankly not that old, 4.5 years old, is being abandoned.
Right. I mean, I think this is they're not joining Microsoft. Microsoft let XP run for,
15 years.
Yeah. 15 years, yeah. I mean, I think this is the big difference between them, between Apple and Microsoft. Apple just doesn't, after 5 years, you're done.
I guess Apple's response would be, but we give you the operating system for free or practically. Yeah. Why wouldn't you upgrade, except that a lot of older hardware can't?
Older hardware, yeah.
It's older hardware, and then some people are using some old version of Photoshop. And, you know, there's lots of little bits and pieces that people hang on to because some piece of software wasn't upgraded to the next version that they use.
The other difference is Microsoft tells you. They give you a date. We know the date. Apple doesn't tell anyone.
And also, Apple has no qualms breaking apps. I mean, they'll break apps with an operating system upgrade all the time. They've been doing it for years. I still can run VisiCalc on Windows 8.1. VisiCalc was written in 1981.
It's 64 kilobytes.
And I can still run it if I want to in a DOS box. I mean,
that's right.
Not that I'd want to.
I generally think Apple's approach is better in these cases. I mean, it's the fact that they don't have to worry about backward compatibility as much has been pretty good for them. But this is a security update, this latest thing, and it's pretty bad to have one in five Macs, you know, suffer this. So
yeah.
they should have at least had a fix just for that part of it. Perhaps not, you know, any other upgrades, but just that part of it seems like something wise to do.
Was this the go to fail that they didn't patch?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Well, that would be
that's huge. A pretty bad one, because that's we've talked about that many times over the last couple of weeks. That's the flaw that means that Safari doesn't really pay any attention to certificates and just says, yeah, whatever, you're who you say you are. I'm sure I could trust you.
I have to admit that we keep most of our computers about one version behind on Apple. Not two, but one. Like most of our computers will be in 10.8 until Apple goes to the next version, and then we'll slowly move to 10.9.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's still a lot of, you know.
The only other thing,
and everybody time to,
and I suppose this is silly, but Snow Leopard was the last one to have Rosetta. So if you still have a Power Mac,
well, it also means that if you had the old version of Photoshop that you don't want to upgrade and you don't want to move to these other things, that was the last one that I think you could run it on.
Right.
You know, and so there are some. I was literally talking to a guy that still is using an old version of Photoshop, because Photoshop for 99% of the users, I would say. They haven't released an upgrade that the users needed, other than operating system upgrades, for at least a decade.
Same with Microsoft Office. I actually am using, I think, a 2007 version. I actually downgraded because I liked it better than the 2013 version. I can't remember why.
I can tell you why. Yeah. One word, the ribbon.
Well, no, you have to go back, I think, to 2003 to get rid of that dreaded ribbon. I hate the ribbon. And to this day, I still have to go to a help system to figure out things that I could do without, you know, any problems on the older versions.
I really thought it was all downhill after Word 5.1 when they moved to 5, when they moved to 6. I was like,
actually, the creator of the ribbon, Julie Larson Green, who was briefly running Windows 8 after the departure of Steven Sinofsky, has a new job at Microsoft. You'll be glad to know. Her new title... sounds to me like it's completely made up. Chief Experience Officer of Microsoft's My Life and Work team.
Hmm.
Okay, so that's her punishment for inflicting us with the ribbon.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about the massive 1.1 million player Pokemon game in just a little bit. But first, I know that's a tease. It's going to keep everybody stay tuned. First, let's hear from GoToMeeting. Our friends at Citrix make simply the best online meeting software ever. We use it all the time. In fact, even if it's just a conference call, we always fire up GoToMeeting because maybe we want to share a screen. Maybe you want to turn on the camera, see the other person. It's so important to build a strong relationship, whether it's with your clients or your team. It's key. You need to meet and collaborate with coworkers and clients on a regular basis to brainstorm, to develop quality ideas and solutions, just to work better. We love GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix. It just works. It's so easy. You sign up on your computer or your mobile device. You'll be launching your first meeting in seconds. You can share the screen, so you'll collaborate. You'll all be on the same page, literally. Turn on the webcams. You'll see each other face-to-face. It's as good as a meeting in person, better in some ways. And you can even present from an iPad. I mean, it really is awesome. Start your free 30-day trial right now. GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. Our promo code is TWIT. 30 days free. You just try it right now. GoToMeeting.com. Promo code TWIT. And
I think we have a GoToMeeting running almost all day.
A lot of groups that are not, you know, in the same room, you just keep it running because you don't have to pay for the...
Well, we have six different accounts, and we use it for... We might have when we're doing an event, you know, we do these hangouts all over the world. We'll have two or three different loops of different people on different sets of meetings. We'll have 20 or 30 people across all these loops to keep the event going. It's great.
It would be really fun to see the behind the scenes of how you do all that stuff.
I'm showing it. I'm going to be showing it at NAB.
You're allowed to go public.
I'm allowed to talk about it at NAB, so I'm going to do a hangout talk on Sunday at NAB, and it's going to be the first time I'm allowed to like really show up all the details and talk about what we
do. That'll be cool.
So
Can you talk about the hangouts you've been doing and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, we do a lot of high-profile hangouts. So yeah. I mean,
you know what we're talking about? If there's a high-profile hangout, Alex Lindsay is in the room.
Well, I don't know if it's all of them, but we do an awful lot of them.
Was that Peter Jackson that time that you were talking about?
Yeah, we did one that included Peter Jackson. Checking. Yeah, all we right. You know, the thing is that Hangouts obviously are extremely easy. You open up the computer. That's what you know.
Yeah.
We have you know.
Farhad's on a Hangout.
Farhad's on a Hangout right now. So what's great about Hangouts is that it is so easy and that you can do it from everything. But obviously, when you start turning into an event, you start at you know you might want to have a little bit more hardware and.
If, for instance, you had the leader of the free world on right. the Hangout.
You might want to have more than a webcam.
Anybody who has nukes and the codes, you wouldn't really want to screw it up.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean...
I can't wait. So this is at NAB you're going to do that?
Yeah. So we're going to talk about really approaching how to approach Hangouts, both from a... you know, and this is really for media folks. So again, the great thing about Hangouts is they're easy. You can do them at home. What we're going to be talking about is if you're a media, you know, organization and you want to take full advantage of Hangouts from and you feel like you've been limited in one way or the other and you're trying to figure out just how to, you know, make them all work as best possible. We'll talk a little bit about why to do Hangouts, a little bit about the structure. I mean, we've done about over 700 Hangouts in the last 2 years. So, and a lot of, and some of them can be as simple as we log in and make sure that everyone just gets in there and has a good Hangout, to, you know, all kinds of, you know, crazy things. So we'll be talking about a lot at NAB.
Can't wait.
Nice.
Will you stream that?
No.
Will you record it?
No. But maybe I'll talk about it here.
You better go to NAB folks.
Yeah.
Hey, if you missed any of our shows this week, you know, I think it was a pretty good week for Twit. Maybe we should just run a little bit of a minute-long recap of what you might have missed this week on Twit.
Previously on Twit.
The bus goes right by like that. Yeah!
Holy moly!
Tech news today.
Is it dangerous to wear Google Glass while driving? I know you've done it.
Somebody said it best. You can't legislate common sense. Like, don't go down the rabbit hole of glass and looking for more and more information from it while you're driving.
All about Android.
It has come down from the heavens, and it looks a lot like the S4. Gina, what do you think of the S5? What's your take on it?
Yeah, okay.
This week in Google.
Google has determined that your GPA is worthless. Wow. The proportion of people without any college education at Google has increased. I'm telling you, I'm the best of all worlds. I went to Yale, and I dropped out.
Hire me, Google.
Twit. Just add water.
Move the camera closer to the window. We were having so much fun the other day. This is...
Yay! Again!
You build a $1 million studio, and that's what you get to do.
That was great. That was a good moment.
Do we have a... what's coming up this week? Okay, Mike Elgin in the TNT studios. What's ahead?
The big newsmaker this week is South by Southwest Interactive, which starts Friday, March 7th in Austin, Texas. Back to you, Leo.
That was short. Is Mike? Did Mike leave for South by right after he recorded that? Are you going to South by, Farhad?
No, I'm not.
No.
I
Are you going, Larry?
No, not going.
Yeah.
I'm going to Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Are you going, Alex?
First time in a long time I'm not. I'm actually scheduled to be in Rwanda right now, so...
Is it over for South by Southwest? Aubrey Sabala, OBS, we love OBS. She was a producer of the Dignation events, amazing events at South by, said, "It's you're going to South by? Sucker." Wow.
It's funny. I went last year, and I thought it was really good. I liked it. It seemed, you know, there are a lot of – last year was sort of a – you know, it was kind of the rise of Uber and other transportation things. And there were lots of new transportation systems. It felt like a little bit like the future of a city, you know, how it would work when we were able to sort of hail everything. I thought that was really cool to get like a lot of tech people in one place and like figure out those kinds of options.
I think these shows had their ebbs and flows. I mean, even CES, there are good years, there are bad years, there are periods. So. I don't know. I don't know if you can judge it from just one or 2 years. Give it time.
Drew Olenoff, who's been on Twit many times, tweeted, as soon as bad marketers and PR people saw South by Southwest as a shortcut to growing an app, it all went downhill. It's true now that a lot of people go to South by Southwest hoping that the magic will happen, the magic that happened for Foursquare and Twitter and other
kind apps. Of like Burning Man.
I think saying that Southwest is gone is kind of like saying no one goes to that restaurant anymore because it's too busy.
Right. It's too popular.
Right. You know, it's you know, it's I think that it's pretty popular. It's going to be popular. I mean, obviously, it's got to find its way because now it's a much bigger operation. I mean, anytime anybody who's been there during the insanity knows that it's is definitely grown up a lot since the early 90s, I think, when I
conferences first
saw it.
Have a role, but they just have to redefine themselves. And CES is still big, NAB is still big, but yeah. It feels like what really, maybe this is just us, but what it doesn't seem like news happens at conferences. You'd be crazy if you're a company that can have a press conference on your own to tie it to a conference. It surprises me that Samsung did or Nokia.
Well, you know,
did.
It's interesting because I watched a Samsung press conference here in Palo Alto instead of going to Barcelona. And when they announced Galaxy Gear, I happened to be in IFA in Berlin. I watched it in the auditorium. It was a much better experience watching it at home. Yeah. First of all, I could record it. Yeah. Second of all, I could go on the radio immediately in my broadcast studio and report on it. I could blog about it. I was much more efficient. I probably scooped people in the room. I wasn't able to get the preview like they got the day before, but I probably scooped people in the room because I was in a much better position to report on it watching it remotely than I would have if I were actually in the room.
Nevertheless, the social element is huge.
Yeah.
It's just a luxury for a lot of us. I mean,
I think that the one of the things that
I'd love to go. I can't justify it.
One of the things that we see bubbling up is, because what we do beyond Hangouts is just interactive events, you know, so if you have to tie a bunch of different locations together. And so one of the things that we're seeing a lot of people asking us about is trying to figure out how to have a conference that has a center, has a heart. But then has small conferences that are occurring all at the same time all over the world, and so we're starting to see more people trying to, you know, we've been trying to figure that out, you know, and we've got, you know, a lot of infrastructure that we built up around that, but it's one of those things that's very hard to do well. You want to have that social area. You want to have a South by Southwest, but what you kind of want to do is have South by Southwest happening in Austin, have a small version happening in New York and another smaller version happening in L.A., and being able to figure out ways people can kind of experience all of that, where you have the real space interactivity with people that you might actually see tomorrow.
You know who's already solved that? Twitch.tv.
Twitch.
Has anybody played Pokemon? Anybody play Pokemon Red? Chad, what game is this? Is this a Nintendo DS?
This is original black and white Game Boy.
Game Boy.
Yep.
So
yep, this is the Nintendo that I owned. The Pokemon that
brilliant
I owned.
Hacker.
A hacker.
Well, this is a hack.
No, it's a port. It's a
figured out
port.
How to create an IRC channel where
he's using Twitch's embedded IRC.
Okay,
it's just the normal.
Somehow tied this IRC channel
right
to a game of Pokemon Red being played on a computer, obviously not on a Game Boy.
Right.
And initially, the way they did it was pure anarchy. Right. Everybody in the chat room, and there were a lot of people.
And that's what's going on now.
Could tell Pokemon how to play.
Yeah, so basically anytime that the emulator could receive a key command, it would look to see what the next one.
AAA, up, right. up, up, down, 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 left,
right.
left, left.
What the next one in the chat would be. And so you can see them just scrolling past there, right? And it could be start, select. So you could type this into IRC. A, B, start, select, up, down, left, right. Any of those. And so
let's tell you, 1.1 million people played this game.
And look at the names.
All over the world.
It was great.
All over the world.
And a huge community exploded around this. There's specific.
How long did this go on? 3 weeks?
15 days.
15 days.
Where
did you know about this?
Oh, absolutely. I was there at the end. I was cheering on the Lord. Like,
after 15 days,
Jesus Bird,
like, Twitch beat Pokemon Red.
They random assortment of ups and downs, ABs, selects and starts, actually beat the game of Pokemon. It was pretty awesome.
Is that kind of related to like a million monkeys typing?
I think. Well, they wrote Hamlet,
so they modified the anarchy mode because it eventually just became impossible. It was just all over the place. They created a democracy mode where the game would look at a majority vote.
So if you look up here, you can see people writing in democracy and anarchy. And up at the very top, right now they're in anarchy mode. See how anarchy is bold?
Yeah, yeah.
That little line with the arrow needs to make its way all the way over to the other dotted line called democracy.
Oh, so you don't get democracy unless everybody votes for it.
Everyone votes for it. Unless if you're stuck and everyone's just getting super frustrated, you can all vote for democracy.
That's a good way to... We should run the country like that.
Sure, sure. Everything's anarchy until everyone gets frustrated enough that they vote for democracy.
You'd actually, that would work. That actually would work.
You are seeing the future of the United States government in this game.
Right.
It'd be like, let's have anarchy. There are now people robbing my house. Let's have democracy.
Democracy, yeah. Please. Yes.
So how did it work when it was democracy? What is democracy?
So in democracy, it would take a vote for 20 seconds, and then whatever won during that 20-second vote, that would be the key press that happened.
So let's go to the end here, because I presume that the only way this ended was when democracy took over.
No, anarchy. Anarchy won? Yeah, the whole time. The thing is, you needed a huge majority of votes for democracy, and lots of people love anarchy. And you'll have people that, while you're walking around in the cave, they'll say start. So that you get into the start menu, and then basically everyone's presses are ridiculous, and they're not going to do anything to the game.
This is the same as the Pokemon card game.
This is
right?
Jesus Bird that's out right now, by the way. They had nicknames for all of the animals. They had posters. These animals, the Pokemon have become memes. I mean, and everyone's now. I wish they had actually captured the chat room, because the chat room was just exploding. I mean, there'd be silly things where people would hit start and then save the game, and everyone would just cheer, like, gotta save the game. Everyone's excited that we saved the game.
It's over. We won.
Yeah. And everyone really, really, really freaked out.
1.165 million uniques. This is not.
It's incredible.
This is uniques. 122 million commands. But that the number of people watching dwarfs that. 9 million people watched. 9 million people watched.
Where
uniques.
Did they watch it?
Twitch.tv/ Did you get to play,
Pokemon.
Chad?
I mean, yeah. I, you know, it's funny. I don't think I ever entered a command. I would enter in like, oh my God, you know, this is going crazy. I don't know if I ever entered in a single command. I hope I did.
Peak number of simultaneous viewers, 121,000.
Mm-hmm.
People watch Twit play Pokemon for over 1 billion minutes. Twitch had to make changes to its server configuration just to handle the views.
I mean, I was, of course, as a company that does live streaming, I was like, so what CDN did they use for that? So what were they? We don't know what they used to stream to.
Well, you know, Twitch is Justin.tv. I think they've learned a lot about scaling. We're on Justin.tv.
Yeah.
They've learned a lot about scaling.
Justin
over
TV
time.
Can handle it.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't realize Anarchy Mode won.
Yeah. It was really. I never actually saw it get into democracy mode. I think what happened and this is unfortunately roundabout news. I heard this through a friend that they were in a position that they were stuck.
Yeah.
And that's when they enabled democracy mode.
Ah.
But before that, they didn't need to.
I think it's better if anarchy wins.
Yeah.
By the way, you will soon.
So in anarchy, in anarchy, it like were there a bunch of commands? I guess that were just wasted, right?
Is
there,
oh yeah,
like,
most it, of them. Would,
oh yeah. Yeah, okay. It wasn't chronological.
You'd have to hit
anything.
It at the right time.
Yeah,
right,
right when the emulator was looking for a command, it had to have come at the exact moment.
But even when you're watching Anarchy, you can see there's generally consensus. People are trying to win.
Well, in that moment, they were. There were nights that they were stuck in a cave for 24 hours. I mean, there was moments that there were trolls. You know,
can we do this? Is that online or do you have to? Some guys did it, right?
Yeah. So they're going to release a new something. Actually, today. So we should actually check that out. I haven't even seen.
Boy, if I were Twitch is not public, but if it were, I would buy stock in that company. They have nailed it. We've been trying to figure out how to do gaming my whole life, how to do gaming television, and never figured it out. And they nailed it. They nailed it. By the way, according to ABC, Xbox One is going to get Twitch viewing soon. So that's exciting. Previously you could spectate on Twitch streams and record game clips, but the founder of Twitch, Emmett Shear, says full integration on the Xbox One.
So it looks like they have now upgraded games, and there is a new version of Pokemon being played at the moment. I have to get through this ad to show you, but and so you can kind of now understand what's going on here. This ad is basically finished. And so people in the chat are saying what they want to do. So now we've upgraded Pokemon. We're on 13 hours, 7 minutes.
So this is early on.
This is early on the game. And so over here, people are saying, like, who won? And there's a straw poll.
Oh, there's the
up,
chat
left,
itself.
Right.
That's nice. Yeah.
Right. And so and there's enough people talking that you kind of get a sense of community.
So how long did you watch this for, Chad?
Total? I mean, it probably an hour or two. Oh, okay. I mean, over the whole time that it was, you know, you'd tune in and you'd watch 20 minutes of it and kind of figure out where they were.
This is a cultural phenomenon, and it just makes me feel older and fish. All right, moving on.
But I think that this gets back into what we were just talking about is that I think people do want to do things that are global, that are connected, you know, and I think
even if it's just playing Pokemon.
And when we talk about the you know, the future of media, I think finding ways as simple as the IRC chat that we have here, that is the key, I think, is figuring out ways to incorporate the viewership so it's not something that is just,
there's,
you know,
something going on.
Yep.
I don't know what it is, but there's something going on. We're going to take a quick break. I know the Oscars are coming up, so we're going to wrap this thing up a little bit. In just a little bit, a couple of quick stories, and then we'll move on. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Squarespace. I'm proud of you guys. Squarespace has now been voted one of New York City's best place to work by Crain's New York Business. That's two years in a row now. And they are looking for new employees. If you are a passionate designer or an engineer, and you really want to participate in changing the web, making the web a better place, Squarespace will actually fly you or your spouse, they'll fly your wife out. No, they'll fly you and your wife, or you and your husband, or your partner to New York City for a weekend on them. And you can interview and check out Squarespace in person. March 15th is the deadline for this. And obviously, you have to be a passionate designer, talented engineer. Not just anybody can work at Squarespace. Visit beapartofit.squarespace.com. What is Squarespace? The best hosting, the best software. They are constantly improving their platform. New features, new designs, better support. It's really, but this is why the cloud is great. You don't have to download anything. Your site is always secure because they keep it up to date for you. You start with 25 gorgeous templates and a logo creator tool now, which lets a small individual or business create their own logo. The best support, 24/7, live chat and email support from the Squarespace headquarters in New York, plus a completely redesigned customer help site for self-help articles and video workshops. They've got e-commerce at all plan levels. That means for the $8 a month plan, you can accept donations or cash wedding registries. They're great for a school fund drive. And when you sign up for a year, you get the domain name for free, too. Great apps. The blog app lets you post, approve comments. The metric app lets you keep track of all your stats, including social media follows. You got to try Squarespace. 2-week trial is easy. Just go to squarespace.com, click the button that says get started, and you're going. You don't need a credit card. You don't need anything. But if you do decide to buy, please use TWIT as the offer code, and we'll get you 10% off. You've got to try it. If you're ready to start your site, your blog, your portfolio, or maybe you're ready to get a hosting company that actually works, Squarespace.com is making the web a better place.
I always know when we go to take someone down, we talk about someone on the web.
You can never take a site down.
Can't take a Squarespace. You
cannot take a Squarespace site down. I'm proud of that. Real quickly, SanDisk introducing a micro SD card with 128 gigs. You know, I always thought it'd be amazing. You know, you could hold the world in the palm of your hand. We're getting there.
Yes.
This is not the SD card. This is a micro SD. That little tiny thing you could swallow. It's not much bigger than a hit of acid, and it's 128 gigs.
You know what's amazing is if you have an Android, a lot of Android phones will take that, which means you can now have a 128 gigs plus 16 smartphone.
They announced it as Mobile World Congress. The sad thing is that even Android phones really don't do a great job with external memory like this. You can store some data on there. Maybe you can put an app on there. It's just, I wish it were better.
It's great if you have a GoPro.
It's great for GoPros.
It's a lot of video. That's all I got to say.
Great for GoPros. California court has ruled it's okay to look at the map on your cell phone. Yeah.
Thank goodness.
Just try to watch the road too, folks. Yeah. Fifth District Court of Appeals reversed the case of a Fresno man. He got a ticket in 2012 for looking at a map while stuck in traffic. He wasn't moving. He looked at his map on his iPhone 4. They gave him a $165 ticket. He appealed it, and here it is 3 years later, or two years later.
And $10,000 later.
Yeah, imagine. He said... It's interesting because his son was hit by a driver who was chatting on a cell phone. So he's very much a hands-free guy. He understands the dangers here. And he says, if you drive erratically, you should be arrested. But you should be able to look at maps while you're stopped. So I'm not sure I'd want to... Go ahead.
Isn't this kind of... It's going to be difficult, right, for the cops to tell. Because you might be looking at your you might be texting, and then you can claim you're looking at their map.
The CHP agrees with you, Farhad.
Yeah.
Right.
But the court said, look, good news. Briggs can get his $165 fine back.
Is there a law at looking at the built-in GPS that, in your car if you happen to have a GPS?
Right, exactly.
My Prius has a built-in GPS, which I never use because it is much more difficult to use than either an Android or an iOS phone GPS. So I would argue that you're safer using a smartphone with a good UI, and especially if you've got Siri or Google Voice, Google Now, than you are with a lot of built-in ones that are supposedly designed by automotive engineers,
right?
But incompetent ones that actually make them more dangerous to use.
I don't even understand how to use my
car. UIs are awful.
We have one in our CRV, and my wife is like, she really knows how to use it, but I get it on, and I'm just like, oh, I just take out my Google Maps. Well, I don't want to talk.
You know, when you buy a car today, the technology in that car is probably 5 years old, and the maps are ancient, you know, by the time it rolls off.
Inevitably, Great article in The Guardian. I'm not going to have time to go through it, but meet the seven people who hold the key to worldwide internet security. They say the reality is closer to the office than the Matrix. In El Segundo, California, about a mile from LAX International Airport, the key holders, not Gozer, but the key holders meet four times a year, twice on the East Coast, twice on the West Coast. Yeah, Harold Ramis. Yeah. We all have to watch Ghostbusters one more time.
My daughter thought it was amazing.
Like, how old is she?
She's four.
And she loves the Ghostbusters? Oh my,
I guess it was when the ghost came out of the trash can. That's all she can talk about now. The ghost came out of the trash can.
They control the DNS system, obviously. And the master key is a part of a new global... Look at this. They're actually... It's a traditional metal key to a safety deposit box, which contains a smart card, which activates a machine that creates a new master key. This is ridiculous. But the idea is that each time they meet, they verify that the DNS is authentic, that it's not been hacked. This prevents, I guess, hacking. I don't know. 14 key holders. Then there's backup key holders. This is all part of ICANN.
How do you become one of those key holders?
Who are these guys?
I think that they're all part of the Illuminati myself.
I want to be a key holder, says Larry Magid. Why can't I do it?
Exactly.
The key holders, I guess, are security experts. All have long backgrounds in internet security and work for various international institutions, chosen for geographical spread, as well as spread, but that's not geographical, as well as their experience. No one country is allowed to have too many key holders, and they go to the ceremony at their own or their employer's expense.
I think there's a whole like Da Vinci Code thing.
Is awesome. I don't know what it is, awesome. But it's awesome.
We think of the internet as being so, you know, decentralized and like sort of that there's no hierarchy, but these are the guys. This is the hierarchy of the internet, DNS.
Great article, and you can watch the video of them getting together and exchanging the keys.
Wow.
Center. Are they part of the Trilateral Commission too? Precautions reminiscent of a Bond film.
They say it's a tightly scripted series of more than 100 actions, all recorded to the minute using GMT for consistency. It's key cards, safe combinations, secure cages. You got to watch this. It's got to be a movie. This is total Tom
Even
Cruise.
Even King could have written this.
Yeah. All but one of the 21 key holders has been with ICANN since the very first ceremony. The one who's gone, Vince Cerf, the father of the internet, he's retired. But he was one of the key holders for a long time.
Yeah.
That is just crazy stuff. Great article.
Get that recruitment from the secure sites.
By the way, did you see the article about, I guess in GQ, about Uber? The guy who actually, I guess, was talking about Uber.
Yeah, I read that.
I thought that was amazing.
What?
He was just talking. It was one of a writer for GQ.
He said it was sexy.
Well, he went out for a week, but the thing that I had never that
Being
had never occurred
driver.
To me. But the thing that had never occurred to me was he said there's a heat map that they see that the drivers see of where the heavy Uber users are, so that they can make sure that they're close, like that level of control. So they don't know exactly where you are, but they know that there's a lot of heavy users in
right.
So I was stick around, out, like, right? I was in Santa Monica.
It's the fact you're there.
I mean, they start looking at that. The heat map is activated right when you open the app, right?
Right.
Like even before you. You know,
oh, that's interesting. So you haven't requested anything, but they just know you're looking.
They and they know that you're around. They know that those people are in that area. And so, like, because I was in Santa Monica, and I couldn't figure out, like, earlier or last week or whatever, and I could not figure out how there were so many Ubers right where I was.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, because it was like, this doesn't seem like the kind of place that a lot of people be picking up cars. And
Uber cab confessions, not. Mickey Rapkin. It's in the March GQ. It's cool. Sexy. That is dedication. Farhad Manjoo, it is so good to have you. You've got to come back. He is, of course, at the New York Times, but he's always been one of the great analysts, writers, a tech writer who actually understands tech. What a concept. Nice to have you, Farhad.
It was fun. This is good to be here.
Come back soon. Next time you're in town, come up here. I'll buy you a scotch. Larry Magid, same to you, buddy. You come here anytime you want. Larry Magid is at the CBS News, and of course, larrysworld.com. You can read his writings. You were telling us something going on for you at Larry's World. What is that?
Well, it may have been on Connect Safely. We did the Safer Internet Day a couple weeks ago in Washington, D.C. Went really well. And, you know, doing a lot of work around trying to get kids to be digitally literate.
Did you go to Congress and you tell them that we need to?
We actually had Senator Chuck Schumer speak at our event.
Oh, he's good, actually.
Yeah, he was good. And I'm headed to Washington next week, and I will be talking to some folks in Congress.
Good. If you want to see more about Safer Internet Day, connectsafely.org. This is a great site for lots of information, including, don't forget, safety tips and advice for parents who are, want to keep their kids a little bit safer. Some great parents' guides on there. Information for everybody. Wants to keep safe online. Thank you, Larry. Great to have you.
Thank you.
Alex Lindsay jumped in here. We were going to have Christina Warren, but her connection was failing.
My connection was okay.
Thank you, Cablevision.
A little choppy, but.
So your connection was perfect. Great to have you. Anything you want to plug?
No. You can find me on just Alex Lindsay on Twitter and on G+.
Thank you for saving my Mac Pro. I gave him my Mac Pro so he could benchmark it because he was curious at how fast. Did you ever get any benchmarks?
No, because we had to give it back to you. So now we installed stuff. We installed stuff on it, but we haven't really pushed it yet. We need more RAM there. So
12 gigs not enough, huh?
Well, once you get it up there, it'll be.
So I had 16 gigs, and they figured out it was really. You said it was haunted, and I was having all sorts of problems. Turned out one of the RAM sticks had been scratched during installation.
It's Keith Eggle. Keith is our guy who was digging through that.
So he found it, pulled it out, and you could see the scratch. I sent a picture to Apple. They said, oh, yeah. And as soon as we get some more Mac Pros in stock, sometime next year, you're going to get a new RAM module. So I just said, nah, I'll just buy it at Other World Computing. They have.
But once you get it, we'll throw it back into the test.
16
we'll
enough?
Do some rendering. Yeah.
Or should I get more?
No, 16 is good. 16 is good.
All right, well, as soon as I put it in, I'll bring it over.
Yep.
Damn it.
So close. So close.
Thanks for joining us. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. That's 3 plus 12 is 15 plus 8 is 2300 UTC right before the end of the day. Stop by and say hi during the live show. We love seeing you in the chat room. But if you can't, of course, on-demand audio and video always available after the fact at twit.tv. That's true of all of our shows. Or subscribe in your favorite podcatcher and you'll be able to see it each and every week. Thanks for being here. I really appreciate it. We'll see you next time. Another Twit.
This is amazing.